everyone, and welcome to Oh, a Podcast, the podcast about playing games and making games, brought to you by O-Rock Studios. I'm Paul Franzen, the head boy of O-Rock.
And I'm Michael Gray, the head writer of O-Rock.
How's it going, Michael? How you been?
It's fine, I suppose. I'm trying to remember something which happened in this past month. Oh yeah, we've got video game stuff to talk about.
We got plenty of stuff to go. Yeah, let's skip over the small talk. Let's get right into it.
Okay, and let's spend the next 5 minutes doing small talk, and then we'll get right into it.
Perfect. So I had a really great lunch this weekend. I talked my wife into stopping at Cracker Barrel, and I love it so much.
Oh, well, they recently built, like, the first Cracker Barrel in Oregon. And by recently, I mean, like, 6 or 7 months ago, so it's not all that recent anymore.
I'm so happy for you.
But
you
I think I think it's still at the point where, you know, it's still new and exciting, and it's still super crowded all the time.
Right.
So it took us, like, 2 or 3 tries just to even get in.
But you actually got in. What did you get?
I had no idea. I've never really had Southern style food, so I got the sampler platter, one of those samplers, so I could try different things. I'm like, have you heard of this thing called grits? That's like, it's like eating pavement. It's
this is good. No, this is good. Let's make people upset like right away when they listen to the podcast, and they'll just turn it off right now. This is good.
So, what did you get?
I'm completely enamored with the country fried steak, just a big pile of meat with this really delicious sauce of some unknown origin on top. I think I get it every single time I go there, which isn't that often. There's like a whole bunch of them like in like a 1 hour radius from our house, but they haven't managed to creep any closer to that. So it's always like if we're going away for the weekend that we can go then. But I always get that and with the fried apple on the side and their mac and cheese. You have to try their mac and cheese. It's very good mac and cheese.
Actually, I know they've been selling the mac and cheese in our stores forever, like our grocery stores. And we finally had a bunch of money from turning in soda cans. And so I'm like, okay, we're going to get the rich person mac and cheese because I never buy Cracker Barrel mac and cheese because it's like $2-3 more than every other type of mac and cheese in the store. So I'm actually looking forward to seeing if their mac and cheese is worth the hype, if it's
Michael,
worth selling in stores.
Michael, can I blow your mind?
What? Okay.
It's not the same Cracker Barrel.
What?
The Cracker Barrel mac and cheese they sell in stores is different from the restaurant. They told me this because I did the same thing. I got it. During week, I think it was like on super sales. Like, okay, finally, I'll open up the wallet and get the good mac and cheese. And I was talking with the person at the checkout, and she's like, "No, yeah, Cracker Barrel is." I think she was saying it was like a cheese company that actually predates the restaurant. So the Cracker Barrel mac and cheese is mac and cheese created by the Cracker Barrel Cheese Company, and it's not the same thing.
That is okay, because I thought. Because I hadn't seen it in stores before Cracker Barrel actually moved into our area. So that's why I made that connection.
Well, maybe I'm totally wrong, but that was what the person at the checkout counter told me.
No, I will trust the person at the checkout counter. They are always trustworthy.
So what video games have you been working on lately?
So I was actually going to talk about playing video games, if you don't mind.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So this past weekend I tried to live stream. I think you saw my poll on Twitter. I had four
yes.
different adventure games. So I tried out Sherlock Holmes Another Bow, which was just kind of awful and didn't work. But it would have been really great to play it when it first came out in like the late 80s, because it has a really expansive vocabulary for a text parser and stuff like that. I just couldn't figure out how to work the text parser. I'm not good with text parsers.
Yeah.
So next game I tried was Lost in Time, which was the By Sierra, which is actually a really good game. I wish I could play it on my own time. The problem is getting the game to run. None of the audio was coming through. I mean, all the sound effects were coming through, but none of the dialogue or the music was coming through. And so cutscenes were just awful because it's just characters moving their mouths and me having to guess what is happening. But the premise seems really interesting. It's, you know, you're a person in 1992. You wake up on, like, a slavery boat, a slave ship from the 1840s. And there's some sort of, I understand there's some sort of evil wizard with time traveling powers who's basically just out to get you and has been planning to get you ever, you know, since before you were born. And
why has he been planning to get you?
I couldn't understand that part. The characters' right. mouths were moving. And, you know, so, you know, I went on a slave boat, solved puzzles there, managed to, you know, solve the puzzle of getting out of the hold and getting to the rest of the boat. And I found some sort of crazy artifact. I don't know what it is. And it switched. The game abruptly switched to, like, 1940s. Now I'm a black woman in the 1940s who just inherited a house. I think it actually might be the 1930s. And a bunch of gangsters slash people who are selling illegal alcohol are in the house that I just inherited. So I need to, you know, get proof. I need to go inside the house, get proof of their evil, I presume, and call the police. I'm like, what does this have to do with what was just going on? I don't know. But it was still pretty cool. It's a half live action game, if that makes sense. So whenever there's an item you can interact with, there's a live action scene of somebody like interacting with the object. You know, if you're using the door handle to open the door, there's just, you click on it and then a little window pops up and you see the woman's arm go and move the door handle.
So if this came out like, what, like 91, 92, you think?
92, or? Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's super early for full motion video like that. Cool.
Yeah, it doesn't cover the entire screen. It's generally just really small thing of but that's a cool way of letting people know which objects are the ones that you can interact with and which ones are just there for decoration. Because all the objects you can interact with have their own little cutscenes, and you know you've solved the puzzle when you can't see, you know, you can't see a scene with that item anymore.
So it's an early Sierra game, so but it wasn't text a text parser. It was point and click.
It's point and click, yeah.
Yeah, cool. So with early Sierra games, I find that I basically get stuck all of the time. Was that an issue that you ran into this game? Were there like a lot of dead ends, a lot of deaths, or was it pretty?
There were no deaths, but I got myself pretty stuck.
Okay.
And so I eventually stopped playing. I'm like, this is obviously a game I need to play on my own first, so I know how to solve the puzzles. But the puzzles were pretty good. Some of the, I'd say the inventory item interface was not so good. Say you have a wallet in your inventory, then there's a sub-inventory for the things in the wallet. And so that was just kind of a pain for, you know, use one item on another item, because I had to, you know, open all these sub-inventories to get to all the items.
Wasn't it Deja Vu did something like that too, right? You would like have your wallet inside your jacket, inside something else. You had to go through all these different containers before you actually find the item that you're looking for.
Yeah.
I seem to remember that.
That was kind of a pain. So the third game I played was Igor Objective Uikahonia, which is a 1995 adventure game by this company in Spain. I forget what other games they've made. I think it's like the Runway Guys or something.
No, the developers of Runaway, a Road Adventure?
Yeah, I think that might be it.
Okay, wait, now I'm going to have to check this game out, because I don't know what I would say.
Runaway, a Road Adventure, Runaway, Road Adventure, Runaway 2, Dream of the Turtles. Yep, that's them. So this is the first game made by them, this company in Spain.
Yeah, Pendulo Studios, that's them.
So it was Runaway, it's a point-and-click adventure series, right?
Yes, yeah, it is, yep. Oh, I'm so excited. I didn't know this game existed. Oh, man. Yeah.
I'll have to share it with you. Yeah. So, a word of warning, there are problems with the game.
Yes, I bet, because there are problems with the Runaway games. But I'm curious to hear what these problems are.
So the main problem with the game is it's just a totally awful title, by the way, Objective Uikahonia.
Yeah.
Which has nothing to do with the actual game. So the storyline of the game is that Igor wants to go on the class biology trip. He's in college or high school or whatever, and his crush is going on the biology trip, so he decides he has to be on the biology trip too. And that's basically the storyline of the game, is trying to find your way to be to go on the biology trip. And you've got like three main objectives, which is one, you need to enroll in the biology class. Number two, you need to do a biology project. And number three, you need to find a bunch of money to pay for your plane ticket.
I'm already looking this game up on eBay. Hang on. I need it. I need it in my life.
Yeah, so the game doesn't make any of those objectives clear, if that makes sense. That's the problem. I mean, I know about it because I played the game, but you don't find out about it until afterwards. It's like, oh, that's the reason I was trying to stop art smugglers. It's because I needed money in order to buy a ticket. Or that's the reason why I, Igor, I don't know, it's kind of in the line of, your adventure game character does horrible things.
That's the Pendulo Studios I know.
Oh,
there it is.
Good, good.
So it's been several years at this point since I've played the Runaway games, but the thing that I remember most about, I want to say it was the first one, could have been the second. It was the first one. You had to burn down a hospital, if I recall. The puzzle solution. Whatever you were trying to do, I think you were trying to get your friend out of the hospital, and the way to do it was to burn it to the ground. So, you know, stuff like that. And I various instances of the characters being, you know, racist, sexist. There are some parts that I would go into a little more detail of that I remember, but this podcast is kind of family friendly, so I won't.
Yeah, I think I could explain some, some of the stuff happens in this game too. Like,
yeah,
basically he just messes with this old woman who lost her cat, and he gives her a fat lizard and says, "Here's your cat." And she goes, "Oh, you're so nice, young man." And his crush actually sees this and says, "Oh, I heard that you gave a cat to this old woman. You're so nice. I'm impressed with you." And I'm like, "Oh, no. No.
I need to play this. I want it right now."
So he kind of uses the... I don't know. That would probably be spoiling some puzzles. But he uses the firecracker for a bad thing. And in order to get the biology project, he tries blackmailing another student. So he purposely tries to set this guy up so he can blackmail him. Yeah, so I actually played through the game on my own, just closely following a walkthrough. And I actually did a video walkthrough, so that will be up on my YouTube channel whenever.
Yeah, I'm skimming my old reviews from GameCola, because I reviewed the Runaway 1 and 2, and I'm just like, there's like a list of the horrible things that you have to do. Like, there's like a part where you examine an object and you say, "Oh, this person really needs this," and then you can just steal it for no reason. You insult people whose help that you need. The character makes fun of you for getting puzzle solutions wrong, which is kind of fun. That's probably something I would do. Here's a fun one. Steal ancient Mayan artifacts from a museum and then make coffee out of them and then feed that coffee to somebody. Destroy other ancient artifacts with a laser beam just to get someone's attention. This part was fun. Watch the love of his life fall into a hole and then just assume she's dead and that's it and just move on. Like a hole was like not that deep. She just fell in and you're like, "Oh no." And then that's it. They're just gone forever.
Yes, you rob a crying woman. You poison people. You actually are supposed to poison your rival. I don't know if he's dead. Well, he's clearly not dead. He makes it all the way alive, and he's alive and well in the ending cutscene, but still.
Oh, man.
There's some I got a couple of things to talk about game design elements, I suppose, which would be more relevant to our podcast. So,
yes. Okay. Go ahead.
They've got a couple of characters that you can't interact with. You can look at the character, but you can't talk or interact with them at all. And they've got a couple of screens, which, I guess it's good that they had a lot of artwork, but those screens were just unnecessary. So, for example, there's the physics classroom where you need to get a pencil, or is it a pen? One of those two things. You get a writing instrument from that room, and that's all the room is good for. You just need to go inside, get a pen, and leave. So that room is basically useless, but there's also the one screen, which is the entrance to the physics classroom, and that just makes me feel like it's a waste of two screens, because the only reason they're there is so you can get a pencil. You could find a they easily could have put the pencil somewhere else and saved, like, two screens.
Yeah, that makes me wonder if they had originally planned to do more with the screen, maybe, and they kind of pared down some of the puzzles, but still left the pencil in there. Like, this actually reminds me a lot of things that older Sierra games, even older than the 1992, 91 one we were just talking about, where they would just have, like, endless screens where you just walk through forests and deserts and nothing ever happens, and you're just, like, traversing all these places and just kind of exploring the terrain and taking in the sights, but not actually, like, doing anything. Something I didn't really like in those games.
Yeah, I don't really like it. Well, I thought it was weird because some of the characters that you can't talk to seemed interesting. Or, like, the person whose folder you stole, she seemed like she could be an interesting character, but she's only there to basically cry and be distracted so you could steal her folder.
Oh, maybe her puzzle. Here's a question. Does this game have a voiced dialogue?
No, it does not.
Oh, I was going to say, suggest that maybe they had to cut dialogue because they ran out of space in the game or something like that, but I guess not. Huh. Yeah, I don't know. That makes me think that it was some sort of late design. Like, maybe they playtested the game and nobody liked that puzzle, or maybe they just ran out of time to program some puzzles that had to do with this character or this location, stuff like that. Or maybe, I don't know, they had the artist draw this background, and then they didn't end up having much of a use for it, but they still wanted to include it so that the work that they had done didn't go to waste, something like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, the puzzle with the crying girl is actually pretty solid. Oh, yeah. That was one I was able to solve on my own. It's, steal her examination folder and switch it with your rival's folder. They look basically the exact same. And on his folder, he has his locker combination written, so you can open up his locker.
I'm so happy that there's an early Pendulo game that I didn't even know about. Oh man, you have no idea. I need to get this and play this right away.
Yeah, I mean, there's also, I'm wondering if there are alternate puzzle solutions, because they've got three inventory items that you never use.
Maybe those go with the puzzles that I'm speculating don't exist anymore. Or maybe they're for alternate solutions. That would make sense too. Maybe there is something more you can do in that scene that just has a pencil that you didn't do because you solved a puzzle in a different way.
Yeah, I'm thinking specifically in the janitor's area, because there's a huge chunk of dialogue about a bird in his area, but you can solve the bird puzzle a different way, and the other way is easier, so...
Yeah.
I'm wondering, like, if it is at all possible for you to try to get the bird, or if that was just them messing with you.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely something that earlier adventure games did a lot more, I feel like. I think that they had alternate solutions much more frequently than games that come out today do.
Mm-hmm.
So it all seems very possible to me, yeah. So were you streaming these games?
Yeah, I live-streamed it, yeah.
So, what did your audience make of these games? Because I feel like the typical Arglefump fan base is, you know, the Nancy Drew enthusiast. Did they like these older, weirder adventure games?
Some people were into Lost in Time, but I feel like nobody was really too much into the Igor game. They liked it okay. They more liked the story, which is what I like too, but I kind of wish there was more story to the game. Because, let's see, there are four scenes with the crush and like two scenes with the rival. I just kind of wish that, or whatever you call it, it's like, you know, you meet your crush at the start of the game, and then she doesn't really appear for hours later. And so that just made me kind of sad. I wish they'd done another puzzle with those characters. As opposed to just random nameless characters who you rob and mess with. But there's also one puzzle in the game. Oh, I'll spoil the solution for you. So there's a maze, and the solution to the puzzle is solution. Actually, you need to spell out the word solution in the maze.
Okay.
And while that's a pretty clever puzzle idea... But it takes 7 minutes to get through the bloody maze and spelling out the word solution. And then you have to go backwards through the maze. You have to do it. It's just the worst. It's just really the worst. Yeah. So, I mean, playing these games made me kind of excited for the idea of doing an old-style adventure game.
Sure.
But, you know, like, the escape room game is totally not in that style. It's in the style of the more modern casual games, where it's just puzzle, 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 and item, 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 item.
Well, obviously, we need to have the main characters insult and steal from each other. Maybe that'll help.
Yeah.
Set fire to the room, the escape room, in order to escape it. Killing everyone else inside. That sounds great.
Yeah. So, I'm kind of having trouble figuring out what the next writing project should be. I went through the escape room game, and I noticed a couple... I mean, I rewrote the dialogue for a couple of items whose puzzles I think had changed. I mean, I replaced one puzzle that I got rid of. I actually think the replacement solution is a lot easier and better, or the replacement puzzle is easier and better from a programming standpoint. Actually, from an artwork standpoint. So the original solution was to, you're supposed to put a horse, there's supposed to be this carriage with room for three horses, but the middle horse is missing, and you're supposed to notice that and put a horse in to finish the group. But I wasn't sure how to do the artwork for that. Because I don't know how I would do the artwork for three horses and one horse is obviously missing. I tried doing it, and it looked like it's just two horses with a gap in between
them. Sure. Yeah, it'd be easier if it was four horses, and then you'd have, like, horse, gap, horse, horse, and then it's... But with three horses, it just looks like, where do you put the gap? And it just looks like there's a space between the horses.
Yeah, so I switched it to one horse on the pedestal who's all lonely, waiting for his girlfriend horse to show up.
Aww.
And I just did a cute little thing. I think I did a cute little artwork thing of them with a heart. Anyway...
That sounds super sweet.
That's an easier solution. But yeah, like I said, when I went through, I had to change. It's like, oh, I changed some of these puzzle solutions. One puzzle I wasn't sure. So I think there are a couple of places where it's like, I don't know if we can do this puzzle, if it's even possible. So I think with the Christmas tree, the puzzle's just moving ornaments around on a Christmas tree to put them in a specific format. I had no idea if that was possible or not.
Right, yeah. Well, in the version I'm looking at, it mentions making the ornaments into the shape of a smiley face.
Oh, hey, that's nice.
I don't know if that's still what you were thinking now, but let's see. I mean, you could literally make each individual item, each individual ornament, a separate item in the game, and then once they're in your inventory, use them on the different spots on the tree and then have the game check to see whether they're all in the correct spot, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Another thing I've done is I've put a bunch of puzzles that would be on a separate screen. That way, if it's impossible to program, it wouldn't, like, destroy the game. So, for example, we've got three blocks. We've got a square block, we've got a triangle block, we've got a circle block. And the idea is that the circle block puzzle will be on a separate screen, unless it turns out it's too hard to program or it doesn't work in AGS, in which case it's just going to go straight from you tried to solve the circle block puzzle to here's your reward for solving the puzzle. We'll just cut the puzzle out. Nobody will be able to tell the difference. They'll think you just used the circle on the circle block and got an item for it.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I tried to disguise it like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible to do stuff on separate screens. We did it a little bit in The Beard in the Mirror, like when you open the drawer, it goes to a separate screen.
Yeah,
that's
what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah, but if you notice, we only did that in the very beginning of the game and then never really did it again. and I mean, it's part of that's just because it's one more art asset you need to make. I guess it depends on how complicated the art is going to be, but, you know, every single background takes time, every piece of art takes time, so... And if we have a dedicated artist working on the project, then, you know, that changes things a little bit. But we haven't gotten to that point yet where we know what the situation with the art is going to be.
Oh my gosh! I'm just checking here. Item 6-4 is marshmallows. I don't see any marshmallows in my artwork. What are the marshmallows used for?
Marshmallows. No, wait. It has an asterisk next to it. That means something.
That's an item you should be able to pick up right away. Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah, because you need them for the,
hot chocolate. To make it a useful thing of hot chocolate.
You need them for the hot chocolate! Where are they?
No. What is the hot chocolate used on? The hot chocolate is... Oh no. Okay. I've got to search for this item. Yeah, see, these are the problems.
Oh, the hot chocolate, I know.
It's on screen 7. Okay, I see. I see what the hot chocolate is used for. But, what was I gonna say? There's a food puzzle, which I don't know. I've seen this in a gajillion games, but it's always in the casual adventure games. I've never seen it in, like, an old-style adventure game. You know, you've got all four of your ingredients at the bottom of the screen, like inventory items, and you move the sandwich over to the frying pan, and then and then you have to move, you know, the soda over to the blender on the left, and then you take the thing from the frying pan and move it into the blender, and then press the blender button to blend it all up. That sounds disgusting, by the way. But something like that, where I know the first step should be easy enough to program, where it, you know, you've got three or four cooking instruments on the screen. You just move something from your inventory onto those instruments. I don't know if the second step is possible of, you know, I move something to the frying pan. Can I then pick it up and use it on something else on the screen?
So you're saying you take something from your inventory or whatever, and you click on the frying pan, add it to the, and then you could do something like,
yeah, and then it becomes
fried. The frying pan is now itself something you can pick up. Like you, you use the hand cursor on the frying pan. It's like what we did in the treasure room scene, right? Where you pick up the hook and then your cursor, instead of like adding the hook right to your inventory, the your cursor just becomes the hook, and then your next step is where on the screen do you use this hook. So it could be something like you click, you put the stuff in the pan, you click on the pan, your cursor is now the pan, and you have to click on the thing on your screen that you're supposed to use the pan with, something like that. That could be possible.
Okay, that sounds good. Maybe. I have no idea where, I mean, what to do, but it's definitely a case where, like I said, I tried to do a lot of the puzzles sort of in the casual adventure game style, and that's generally a puzzle you see a lot, you know, food slash cooking puzzle. Other puzzles you see a lot, feeding a hungry animal.
Is there going to be is there a cute animal in the game?
It's the squirrel, right? I think
the squirrel. Yes, you're right. Okay,
I changed the squirrel's artwork. Oh yeah, there's also a chicken, but that's not. You don't feed the chicken. You scare the chicken. Is the puzzle solution?
Oh, okay, that's fair.
Now, here's the puzzle that I can final puzzle to ask about is the exit room. Puzzle. So basically the way the game is structured is that we go through your room and, you know, use items on other items. And in the end, your inventory is just going to have the, you know, three pieces of paper which have the digits for the exit door. So it's one of those doors where you just need to press in the passcode and the door unlocks. And so I was wondering if that is actually a possible puzzle. Is it possible to have, like, just a screen where it's just the door and your character, you know, has the three digits and they have to select what order to use the digits in? Then that would be just guessing, so, I presume.
Well, we could do something like, we see the door, we see the lock with the number. I'm picturing, like, a padlock with numbers. You kind of scroll through the numbers, right? Or flick through the numbers.
Ooh, yeah, that could
like
be
that.
A thing, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm just thinking, like, the, you know, you go there, the room, the lock is set to whatever the default is, like 000, and maybe you hover your hand cursor over each of the buttons individually, and you click, and it, you know, the art just changes to 1, and then 2, and then 3 every time you click it, and just kind of scrolls through those. That would actually, that should be fairly simple, and actually not even that art intensive, because, you know, just drawing a bunch of different numbers probably isn't that tough. And then every time you change the number, then the game then checks, like, is number correct? If so, and then the door unlocks, something like that.
Okay, yeah, that sounds pretty good.
I think we need more wacky item combination puzzles, less casual game puzzles.
Aww.
Sorry, see, that's the problem with both of us collaborating on an adventure game, right? Because the wacky item puzzles is like, my ideal game would be like 95 to 100% that.
Well, that's part of what I like about this. I mean, I did it in the style of the adventure games. I mean, on purpose, the ones that have like wacky, sort of wacky puzzle solutions. Like, here's a chicken. You need to scare the chicken. or, you know, we need to shave the beard off of the Statue of Liberty. I think that's weird enough to work.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, no, I mean, I guess it feels like there's probably a pretty good balance between the two types of puzzles. I'll just have to see when I you know, move into production with that and sort of shift my focus over to that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I had no idea how to write it or no idea how to program it or basically just set up the documents. So it was me trying my best to figure out my main problem was, okay, I want to have it, so you only have these three inventory items by the time you're done with all these puzzles. And I knew I wanted at least four items per room, so I had to figure out some sort of way to get items to overlap, similar to the adventure game puzzle segment in Mermaid Mission Titanic, where I wanted to have a set amount of items, but I specifically wanted to have each screen have at least one item, which you use on another item on that exact same screen.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that would be, I don't know, for whatever reason in my mind, it's like that's an ideal thing. Because it's kind of boring when, you know, I find four items on the screen. None of them can be used here. They're used on a completely separate screen.
Yeah, okay. I can buy that, sure.
So I tried to give every screen at least some sort of puzzle where you pick up an item on the screen and you use it on another item on that exact same screen.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not that level of structure, I don't think, when I'm designing games. There's a lot of different weird things I do with items when I'm designing puzzles. So one thing I'll do is I leave kind of little breadcrumbs for myself. Like if I'm designing a room and there's a really interesting type of item I want to put in that room, I'll put it there even if I don't know what we're going to use it for later. The big example from test game, The Beard in the Mirror, was the map in the drawer. We put that map there. We knew it was important. We had no idea why it was important. We didn't figure out what the map was at all until, basically many, many years into development, until we got to the part where we needed the map. We didn't know what that map was for, but we put it in there. We kind of baked that into the design early on. So, you know, we'll do stuff like that. Or, what was it, in Life in the Dorms, there's a puzzle involving ramen noodles. Once you use the ramen noodles, I thought it made sense that you would be left with the seasoning packets left over because we didn't need them. So I put them in the inventory and I just sort of figured I would come up with a good use for them later. And then sometimes, you know, you'll design a puzzle around being able to use that item, make it nice and neat. Maybe it'll inspire you to come up with a puzzle that you hadn't thought of before. Stuff like that. And I do try to do that, like the thing you were saying, I do try to make sure that most of the items you pick up, you don't necessarily use in the room that you're already in, just because I think if the majority are like that, the puzzle gets a little too easy. I kind of like to have items spread around a bit. I think the downside of a lot of this, as I think you noticed while you were streaming The Beard in the Mirror, is that you have a very large inventory throughout most of the game. And I didn't do a good job of decluttering the inventory. Once you use an item, unless there's a specific reason why you would no longer have that item anymore, it kind of stays in your inventory.
Yeah, whereas, you know, the modern adventure game style is items are used once and then that's it.
Yeah, so I don't know, I thought it made sense to keep the items around and maybe you could use them later, but it did, like, the farther you get in the game, the more complicated it gets. Like, I know I have a puzzle here and I have 600 items in my inventory and I don't know which is the single item, and it could be an item that I have already used before. So I could have done a trick like the Curse of Monkey Island. I think the other Monkey Island games do this too, but definitely Curse does a thing where once your inventory gets sort of oversaturated, you get to this part in the story where you're eaten by a snake. And once you get out of the snake, you discover that a lot of your items have been digested by the snake and you don't have them anymore. So, like, they kind of write in story instances for why you don't have these items anymore. And I kind of like that, at least, as a way to kind of clean the slate.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and there were definitely, by the end of development, items that we didn't use for anything. I think we might have talked about this before, but in an early build of The Beard in the Mirror, you could pick up thorns from the wall in the thorny cave. Paul would go, ouch, and then add them to his inventory, and then we never found a use for them. So the problem with those items, actually, so the thorns are something that if you don't pick them up on that screen, there's a point in the game where you can't go back and get them. So once we got to that point, and we hadn't used the thorns, we just figured we should just drop them from the game. Because otherwise, if we did make it an essential solution, then we've just suddenly introduced a potential dead end into the game, where you need the thorns to beat the final battle, but you don't have them because you didn't get them. That's something I sort of do have to pay a lot of attention to in puzzle design, is making sure that at the point that you need an item, it's always possible to still acquire that item if you, for whatever reason, have not acquired that item yet. That's like a really important, I think, adventure game design tenet that was not something that a lot of early adventure games followed. Again, I keep dumping on Sierra. I love Sierra. Early Sierra games were lousy with issues like that, and they probably would have said that that was an intentional design choice, but I think it was a bad design choice.
Yeah, so, you know, that was just one of the more interesting things of trying to figure out how the various puzzles overlap in, like I said, in the more modern style of you use an item on an item and you get another item.
Yes. So before we get into letters, I'll just give a quick update on a couple of the games we're working on, if that's all right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could do that,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah. Internet Court, we have most of the footage at this point. There's only a couple stragglers. Yeah, a couple stragglers I'm still waiting for. We did run into a few technical issues. I had to send a couple of our actors back for reshoots. I'm not going to name any names.
Mom, we hate you.
No, there was an actor, and I love him. His work was great. He did have a big Star Wars poster hanging in the background in all of his scenes. So I felt super bad about it. I had to ask him to go re-record it all because I don't want to be sued by Disney, is the thing. We hadn't secured the rights to Star Wars for use in our little FMV game. So, you know, stuff like that happens. It's no big deal. They were cool about it. So, I felt bad. I never like asking people to redo work or do extra work. But stuff happens. But yeah, the game editing has been going really well. Oh yeah, I think I actually said this on Twitter earlier. I'm like 7 pages into it or something out of 70 plus pages, something along those lines. I've had to create over 100 different caption images already. So there's definitely going to be like over 1,000 captions, I'm pretty sure, in this game.
Oh, please tell me there's like some sort of cheat to make it easier.
I haven't found it yet.
I've noticed, I found that out like halfway through the Everything Wrong With series.
Yeah.
Was, so what I did to create the captions on the videos, because I use Microsoft, what do you call it?
Movie Maker?
Yeah, Windows Movie Maker, which they no longer make anyway, anymore. But what I always did was, you know, I'd have to click the caption button, and then I'd just copy-paste whatever the caption was from the script.
Yeah.
So it turns out that you can just copy-paste. You don't need to hit the caption button. Movie Maker automatically knows you're making a caption if you're trying to paste text into there. Right. So that saves you like 3 extra clicks. It's nice.
So the problem is that I'm not putting the captions into the video files. I'm doing them all through RenPy so that people can turn the captions on and off if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't do it in the, like, the other option would be that I have 2 different versions of each video. I think we talked about this before.
Yeah.
So I haven't as yet found, I mean, I'm getting faster at it. It doesn't take as much time, but it still takes time, not just making the individual art, but also like timing them in RenPy to the scene in the game.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know how you do the timing in RenPy, but I do know there is some sort of program somewhere which does a better job of subtitles and timing. Mm-hmm. It's specifically designed, I think, for anime videos.
Sure, yeah.
So
yeah.
People could do their own, and guess what? People got tired of changing the subtitles every 3 seconds, and so they made their own program to make it go faster. I just don't know if that would work in conjunction with RenPy.
Yeah, I mean, I can look into it. Maybe there is a simpler way to do it. The problem is, of course, that RenPy is not built for making FMV games. So, you know.
Nothing is.
So I'm making it work. And it's honestly, it's not taking up as Like, it's not taking up that much more time compared to any of the other stuff I'm working on with the game. So, you know, everything takes forever. It's fine. maybe, you know, I'm getting faster at it, so hopefully I'll just keep getting faster at it. But yeah, the game's moving along. Every time we get new footage in, it makes me smile so much and laugh so much that Lizzo has to come to my room and ask me to please stop laughing. Pizza Delivery Boy, real quick. I don't think we mentioned. I don't think we had launched the Steam store page yet when we recorded last. I forget if we had. Anyway, there's a Steam store page for the game now, so everyone can go check that out. Watch our trailer, check out the screenshots. And this is important. Post nice things about the game and how much you really, really want to play it on the discussion board. Add it to your wish list, all that stuff. I have 4 pages left in the script. 4 pages.
Oh, and one of them's just the end, right?
Yes. But that also is inclusive of the credits, which is its own project.
Oh, yes, yes, it will.
So, but that's fine. That's moving along very, very well. Yeah, I think that's sort of the quick rundown.
Mm-hmm. So I've got similar news. The store page for Mermaid Mission Titanic is up, and
awesome.
The final round of testing should end tomorrow. I've heard from 3 out of the 4 testers. So, you know, if I don't hear from the 4th tester by the deadline tomorrow, I'll just send them a message.
Yeah, awesome.
But it's interesting, you know, 2 of them both got tripped up by the line of dialogue where the mermaid refers to her tail as a she. And I'm like, oh, I thought that was cute, but apparently it was confusing. I thought mermaids would assign genders to their tails. Tails are definitely female. But apparently, I was like, why is she saying I'm going to miss her? Is she talking about her daughter? No! She just mentioned her tail in the previous sentence. And somebody found a bug in the adventure game segment. Somebody else found a... They thought they found a problem with the shark puzzle maze segment, but it wasn't. They just missed the fact that there's a see the rules button.
Oh, yeah. Well, that could mean, though, that you need to make the button more obvious or...
Yeah.
Or do something else to indicate to the player that, hey, there's a button here with rules on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but basically I copy-pasted the same idea from Francie Drew and the Missing Mother-in-Law, where, you know, one of the dialogue options is just take a look at the letter again.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like, take a look at the rules again. That's basically what it does. It just shows you...
Okay, it's just one of the dialogue options.
Yeah. In any case, I'm very sad that they found a bug with the adventure game puzzle, and now I'm just sort of scared to do adventure game puzzle. But it's something
okay.
I need...
You don't need to worry about the bugs in Real Life Room Escape. I will take care of those.
Yeah.
That'll be my problem.
Well, we'll see. You know, I kind of designed those puzzles to see if it was actually possible to do, like, a maze puzzle in RenPy, or to do an adventure game-style puzzle in RenPy, and it turns out it's possible, so I need to keep that in mind, you know, when trying to decide what to write next, what to do next.
Sure. Cool. What else you got? Anything else?
No, let's move on to the...
Letters.
Yep.
So, first of all, we got a message from Allison Rose, who wants to know, what is your favorite graphically designed element in Mermaid Mission Titanic?
That would be my graphic designer for Mermaid Mission Titanic.
I thought so.
The text box is really cool. But I also like it's not the trading cards, but it's like the backgrounds for the cards, or the not
sure.
badges, but large card art. That's it. Large game
the large
card
art.
Yeah. Those were the best. It was basically her, because she's played through the entire game, and so she came up with interesting combinations of putting the characters in scenes, or, you know, before the good-looking backgrounds that they never stand in front of the game. So it's different enough that it's really cool.
Okay, cool.
I also like the achievement artwork of the mermaid holding, like, a little trophy. That's just really cute for solving all the puzzles. It's like, yay!
Have you started programming achievements yet?
I have programmed all the achievements. I have tested them all.
Cool.
It's I don't know how I'm going to test the final achievement, which is you've unlocked all the other achievements. Hooray, you get a completionist achievement. I have no idea how to test it, because I didn't make a variable for that one, so I'd either have to, like, add a variable for it, or maybe just play through the game once on Steam before release, if that's possible.
Oh yeah, it definitely is.
Okay, so can you do that to test out your achievements? I was going to ask.
Oh yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
So I'm going to try that, and if not,
No, because you can, I mean, what I'm planning to do with the Pizza Delivery Boy is I'm planning to upload the test build to Steam and then just give all of my testers code so they can download it directly through Steam. So that way they can test not only the game itself, but to make sure I set up all the Steam stuff correctly, including achievements. And speaking of which, we need to come up with achievements at some point.
Oh, for Pizza Delivery Boy?
Yeah, did we ever do that?
No, probably not.
All right. Well, we'll figure that out. It's on my list. Yeah. Okay. So we also got a letter at podcast@orrock.com. I think this is literally the first time we've ever gotten a letter for the podcast.
Yeah.
Are you ready for this? Hello, Orrock. I'm a big fan of your games and your podcast, and I have a question about puzzles. But first, I have a story. Some puzzles are too hard. I have been a fan of Game Cola for years, and Orrock pretty much since it began. Yet when I played Tales of Monkey Island for the first time, I got stuck on the puzzle where Guybrush doesn't want to ask LeChuck for help, but you actually have to ask him for help. I have listened to Paul complain about this puzzle for literally years of my life, but I still got stuck on it. Yeah, because it's a terrible puzzle. It is the worst. So my question is, how do you write puzzles to be fun hard and not scream and pull your hair out hard? Do the two of you collaborate when writing puzzles, or do you write them separately? What is the worst puzzle you have ever had to solve in a game? I think you guys are super great, and you always make my day. I hope both of your days are awesome. Julia.
So I think we've kind of gone over this here in this podcast. Clearly with the escape room game, we haven't made any puzzles in conjunction with each other. It's more like, you know, I've wrote it myself and came up with puzzle ideas, and then I'm asking you, do those work? Are they okay before we can actually make the puzzles? Because I know, like, a year or so ago, I had more puzzles that I threw at you. It's like, oh, this would be a cool idea. We could have a music puzzle, and you're like, no, that would be impossible to program.
Yeah. Well, we haven't worked on together too many games that really have much in the way of puzzles. I mean, Francie Drew games a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think some of that was just like, I forget, did I come up with the idea that we should have a seating chart puzzle?
Yes, you did. That's a pretty common thing. I mean, it's an obvious thing for any video games with that take place with a wedding. People think I was like referencing the Nancy Drew game where there's a wedding, but it's like, no, it's a pretty obvious puzzle. You need to take advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that was the extent of our collaboration, though, was like, I would say this would be funny, and then Michael would go and have to actually do the work of designing it. Like you said, we did touch on some of this already throughout the podcast, but I did want to go a little bit into how you sort of balance difficulty in puzzles. I feel like when I'm designing a puzzle, I actually don't focus on that as much. Like, the thing I pay attention to is steps. Like, how many steps is this puzzle? Is this puzzle, like, the central point of this chapter of the game? In which case, you know, I have to make, like, kind of a cascading flowchart of puzzles, almost. Like, this is the main thing. In order to get there, you have to solve this puzzle and this puzzle. In order to solve those two puzzles, you need to solve three more puzzles per, like, this whole thing. So I sort of layer them like that. That said, the most important thing that I have ever discovered or thought about or done with balancing puzzle difficulty is the testing. And the best thing I have ever done for that I've ever come across for testing difficulty of puzzles is, like, literally having someone playing the game in front of you and, like, watching over their shoulder and taking notes and seeing where they get stuck while they're playing the game. And then you know that, okay, they've been working for like 10 minutes to try to solve this puzzle. there's probably something wrong. They don't look like they're having fun. They are crying. Oh no, oh no, I must fix this puzzle. So stuff like that, like that'll tell me that, okay, so I clearly need to put more hints. There needs to be more stuff that, like, if you examine stuff in the environment, there should be something that sort of tells you, or that, like, leads you in the right direction. Or sometimes you just need to make it more obvious what you're even trying to achieve. Sometimes you haven't really done your job with that. I know with Life in the Dorms, the programmer I worked with that on that game, Ted, he suggested, and I thought this was a great idea, that we have just something on the interface that tells you exactly what your current objective or objectives are. So you kind of keep that in mind while you're playing the game. And I thought that was a good idea.
Yeah, that's also something that's common with, I guess, modern adventure games as objectives, although
yeah,
sometimes I feel like people include them because they feel like they have to, and then you just end up getting really bad objectives, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and some games do, like, built-in hint systems, too, that really sort of help you along the way, although I was just rereading some Game Cola reviews of I think it was Tales of Monkey Island, and the hint system just, like, completely broke me. I don't know if this was before, maybe there was a patch at some point that fixed this, but when I played the game, the hint system was just, like, it was just telling me, there's an item somewhere you need to get it, and that was it? And that's not the worst part. The worst part was that there was no item I needed to get. The next solution involved talking to... This is the same... I think this might be literally the same puzzle that that Julia was talking about. This stupid... Ask LeChuck for help, even though Guybrush won't... I'm so angry. Anyway. So that's my answer to her other question. The worst puzzle you've ever had to solve in a game. You already know what that is, Julia. You've experienced it yourself. Do you have any thoughts on that, Michael?
I was just going to say, like I said, somebody found a glitch with the adventure game puzzle in Mermaid Mission Titanic. And so that actually broke the built-in hint system. So basically the way I program the hint system is first he searches to see if he found every item, and if you haven't found an item, he says, okay, you need to look in this area again. Then if you found every item, it checks your inventory and says, okay, if you have this item in your inventory, if that's the number one item in your inventory, then he gives a hint as to what you're supposed to do with it. That's just how I program the hint system. But I also found out that he has nothing to say if you're at the final puzzle of the adventure game segment where you've got all the things out of your inventory and there are no areas to search. Anyway, the glitch with the thing was it accidentally turned it off, so it made the game think that you didn't find item number 2, which is mashed potatoes in room 1, even though you have. And that's an item that doesn't show up in your inventory. It's an item that you're supposed to use an item on. So, you know, it was just bad times. So,
yeah, I don't know. I tend to think that from a programmer standpoint, maybe built-in systems are a little more, hint systems are a little more trouble than they're worth. But I guess I just assume that everyone's just going to go to game FAQs or whatever and look up the answer in a walkthrough if they're stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's not something, I don't know. I don't know what kids these days do when they're playing these kind of games. Whether it's more important to them to have something built in, or if it's more important that there just be any way for them to do it, and if it's an external thing, then that's fine too. I think you might have seen this. The way I got around this with the beard in the mirror was that I have a hint line that you can tweet at if you're stuck in the game, and then I will literally just give you a hint, and that worked out well. People have used it. I think I did have one reviewer complain that it was too much trouble and we should have just include a built-in hint system. But, you know, saying just include a built-in hint system is one thing. Actually doing that, you know, is a month of my life, you know? Like,
well, here's an idea. Because I know... I think the game's going to go with the system where, you know, like your inventory pops up and you can, you know, left-click an item on your... or right-click an item on your inventory to get... You know, the character talks about the item and what it is, and sometimes they give a clue as to what the item is. Most of the time, they just make a bad pun.
Yes. But it should always be that they make a bad pun.
Would it be possible to give, like, a third option there on the inventory screen where it's just, you know, hint the hint option where it just tells you specifically, here's the item it's supposed to be used on.
Oh.
Would that be an easier workaround?
That's interesting. So you have multiple interactions within the inventory item, inventory menu. One that lets you just equip the item, for lack of a better term.
Yep.
One that examines it, and one that gives you an idea of what you're supposed to do with it. That's very interesting.
One that's just a straight up hint and tells you what you're supposed to do about it. I mean,
that could be, wow. That could be a breakthrough. I like that.
Ooh.
That actually would be pretty easy. I mean, right then the work is just writing the hints, but yeah, that would be pretty easy to program. That's very interesting.
That reminds me of the Igor Project Uwika Kahonia. The way that game works is if you right-click on an object while your cursor's on it on the screen, it automatically sets you to the action that you're most likely to take on it, which is look at it.
Oh, that's
interesting.
Or if you
hover it over a person, it sets to talk to person. Part of the problem with the game, though, is give item to person and use item on a person are used interchangeably. They should be the exact same bloody thing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's a thing. I think I want to say it was like Maniac Mansion or one of the older LucasArts games where they have the big verb menu at the bottom of the screen. I want to say they did something like that too, where you would just hover your cursor over a hotspot and it sort of like highlights what the most relevant verb is. But that almost seems like a symptom of having too many verbs than it is like a helpful answer. That just means if you're at the point where that's a thing you need to do, then maybe your verb menu isn't working so great.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I hope we answer your question, Julia. Thank you so much for writing in.
Yeah, thanks a lot. If you want to write a puzzle for us, let's let's do it.
All right. I think that about does it for this episode. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Paul M. Franzen, and Michael is at Arglefunf, spelled exactly as it sounds. You can check out all of our games on Steam or itch.io, or just visit orock.com for the complete library. Our theme song is Dead Monster by March of the Danger Men. You can check them out on SoundCloud. And as we said earlier, we just launched our Steam store page for our next game, The Pizza Delivery Boy Who Saved the World. Search for it, watch the trailer, add it to your wish list, post lots of comments about how much you love it and want to play it. That would be very cool of you to do. And finally, if you have any questions about game development or our games specifically, guess what? We'd love to hear them. Email them to podcast@oarock.com. Anything you'd like to add, Michael?
No, it's just thanks for supporting us. Buy our games when they come out in the next, 2 to 3 months. I don't know how long programming is going to take with the Mermaid game.
Yeah.
I hope it's soon. But that just means the final tester will find so many bugs. So many bugs.
Oh, yeah. This game's not coming out till next year.
Yeah, it's just awful.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
We got it. We got two quick questions on Twitter I want to talk about very briefly before we get into the big nice letter that we got. So first of all, we got a message from Hugh Miller, who we've worked on with both Pizza Boy and Internet Court. When I made my call for questions, he said, I want to ask a question, but I don't know what I want to ask. So yeah.
Oh. Thank you for your questions.
I guess that's nothing. keep trying, Hugh. You'll get them next month.